Welcome to the Solid Man Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Curry, licensed marriage and family therapist. SolidMan.com is an ongoing conversation designed to empower men to master the art of being a man. Good day, gentlemen. This is lesson number 23, Mastering Your Masculinity. And this would be talking about benchmark for passion. And so the whole idea of this is pillar four. This is the map of masculinity. And we're now looking at the whole idea of the passion benchmark. So quadrant four is passion. So we're now on our last quadrant. From the individual or autonomy hemisphere, we're moving up to the relational hemisphere. So this quadrant brings us back into our interaction with others. How we relate. We remain in the high risk side of life where vulnerability, danger, and discomfort exist. This is the corner where courage meets connection. So it's on the top left, upper left corner of the map. So on the right, on the left is courage or vulnerability. On the top is connection or attachment and love. So in this quadrant is the passion benchmark. So the word that represents this quadrant is passion. The concept of passion is deeper than what it seems. And so it's going to take a little bit of explanation. When you hear the word passion, you probably think of love, desire, romance, maybe lust, or sexuality. These are absolutely concepts of passion. However, there's much more to this word. And so, like many concepts, think of passion as a coin that has two sides to it. The first side is what I just described, desire, and the second side is emptiness, or suffering. Like I said, this is a pretty complex word, passion. So the desire side of the passion coin is ruled by the instinctive parts of our system, your heart, your intuitive, emotion, gut. And as we move through life, we accumulate things that we desire that are not from our choice or necessarily from our conscious awareness. For instance, we may be attracted to blondes or maybe brunettes. Not out of choice, but just because that's what I'm attracted to. This is true of all the millions of other things that we may desire. We might like breasts, or we might like butts. We might like Ford, or we might like Chevy. We might like peace, or we might like adrenaline. At times, desire comes from unexplainable places. Who knows why you desire certain things? Passion is desire, and desire at its core is just basically wanting something. And desire as a concept requires not having something. If you had that thing, you would no longer desire or long for it, because it's now in your possession. So passion is as desire is wanting or longing for something. Since I want something, I don't have that thing, and so as my want and desire increase, it becomes passion, where my energy, focus, and intent are increasing toward that which I don't have. That's desire. The big question here is, what do you want? And so many people go through life more concerned with what everybody else wants, or what will make them happy with me. To ask, what do I want, often feels selfish. Therefore, it's not okay to desire. This is wrong. The masculine man knows what he wants, and he pursues that. You may not achieve what you desire every time. That's not even the point. The point is allowing yourself to live with desire, with wanting. Remember, just because you desire something does not mean it needs to be or will be fulfilled. Living with desire is where passion comes alive. Passion is defined by desire, not necessarily the fulfillment of that desire. So that brings to the other side of the coin, passion as emptiness, or embracing sacrifice, or embracing not having something. We usually do everything we can to fill or fulfill all of our desires without even thinking about it. The emptiness aspect of passion requires that we are attentive to our desire and aware of our experience of wanting. We are required to allow our conscious to enter into the game and become attentive and aware of what we actually do desire. Our maturity and self-discipline in the realm of passion is born out of emptiness. Emptiness is having serenity and peace in a state of not having something, something you desire, yet not having to fill any emptiness or void. Embracing emptiness is the intentional self-sacrifice from a place of strength for the good of others. That's love. Passion requires that you embrace the fears and anxieties of life, not escape from them or numb them out. So often when men experience emptiness or tension, they will turn to their drug of choice to feel better, whatever that drug of choice is. This is an escape from feeling empty and not experiencing the fullness of passion. You'll never feel much about passion about life at all if you do this. So we often turn to any drug of choice to escape that emptiness. So purposefully pursuing the emptiness of passion is a brilliant movement which truly clarifies the desires of a man. You may have been pursuing what you want, which is good. Now, as emptiness is experienced, a man is able to consciously decide, is this what I really want? This is about clarity. Embracing the tension that emptiness brings helps you to determine what is of true value to you in your life. What you spend your limited energy and passion on attaining is what has real meaning to you. The challenge to embrace emptiness and desire at the same time will allow you to experience the fullness of deep living. Your life will become more alive, purposeful, and full. The emotions that you stuffed, the empathy that you set aside, and the love you want will come back deeply. To some, this is a daunting excursion and takes a lot of courage. Well, that's what passion is. So on one hand, passion creates a posture of excitement and drive where a man energetically pursues that which he desires. And on the other hand, he's able to rest in the tension of not having that which he desires. That's emptiness. He does not have to possess or own anything to experience wholeness and contentment in life. Remember, you're already whole and complete. You don't need anything outside of yourself. Healthy passion is experienced in a beautiful balance between drive and desire with suffering and emptiness. Unhealthy passion is a compulsive drive to possess, which is addiction. Unhealthy passion will have nothing to do with emptiness. Unhealthy passion will have nothing to do with emptiness. It must have whatever it is that it desires. Healthy passion can rest in the desire of not having. So passion is the balance of desire and emptiness. This is difficult for men who have turned away from desire in their life. It may be that you've been taught that desire is sinful, or at least some of the things you do desire are sinful. Like, for instance, the shape of a woman's body, or the sexual energy that's described as feeling horny. So if you've spent much of your time pushing those desires down and seeing yourself as defective because you believe those desires are true desires, a lot of men really question their God-given sex drive. You may have been rejected or abandoned because you had desires. So desiring to be in a close relationship puts you in a position that feels very dangerous, as if life really is at stake. Your desire for intimacy forces you to move into the emptiest place in your life because it feels dangerous to you, and you'll just then hold back. Living with passion is no small endeavor. Consider one of the most significant stories, which uses the word passion, the passion of the Christ. Most people are puzzled by the fact that the term passion is used for this story. For us, men who are wanting to live in the fullness of masculinity, it makes sense. It's the perfect example of what it would mean to experience passion in every sense of that word. Christ is at once moving with the deep desire and love for humanity while experiencing one of the most grueling deaths mankind has ever devised. The desire for the well-being and relationship for people is driving his willingness to allow himself to be crucified. It is passion as both desire and emptiness at the same time, simultaneously. This sacrifice as passion is a willingness to place yourself in suffering or harm's way for others. This is not self-harm or suicidal, but it's an attitude of fearless courage for the well-being of those you love. A man could only do this if he has somewhat settled the specter of death that floats around in the lives of every person. This man can choose to live his life as sacrifice, whether that is losing his life in full by taking a bullet, or choosing to use his time to help his kid with homework rather than watching the football game. This is where the two cornerstones are interacting as well. The desire for connection is the driver, and movement is one of courage and vulnerability. Christ spends his greatest commodity for the souls of all humans. In this extremely vulnerable action, he commits one of the most powerful acts in human history. This is passion. Whereas the story of Jesus is powerful and even somewhat extreme, how would a regular man live a life of passion? What would this look like? Using the language of the map of masculinity, a man of passion would live with courage as he seeks connection. That's that quadrant. The man of passion would fearlessly be wholehearted, open, and engaged in all he does, in his relationships, adventure, play, work, and calling. He pursues what he desires, but is okay if he doesn't obtain it. The man of passion would seek connection, intimacy, and restoration of relationships. True, he is limited with only having so much bandwidth in relationships, but those that he is committed to, he does in full. That's passion. So other words to describe passion. Embraces emptiness, gives, loves, cares, makes personal sacrifice, listens, sees, cherishes, speaks, blesses, pays attention to self and others, vulnerable, open, empathetic, compassionate, attentive, knows his emotions and feelings, redemptive, patient, committed, faithful, supports, gracious, graceful, thankful, content, reliable, and pursues. And he is settled. So the two muscles of the passion quadrant will give more meat to the idea of what it means to live with passion. So let's look at those muscles. They're two Greek words, thumos and eros. The thumos muscle. So in the passion quadrant and leaning toward the cornerstone of courage and vulnerability is the thumos muscle. Thumos is in the top hemisphere that it has to do with relationship, but it's leaning toward the courage cornerstone. This means that while thumos predominantly has to do with a man of courage and vulnerability, he does much of his work in the realm of connection and relationships. The ancient Greek philosophers spoke of thumos as life force. It's found in certain things, like a spirited stallion or a spirited debate. Here I'm using the word thumos to define that aspect of a man that is spirited, vigorous, and full of vitality. It's a strong sense of enthusiasm about life. Thumos describes a man who lives with a whole heart, being present and aware and open with all he does. Since this part of the quadrant leans toward courage, it is more to do with a man's posture in life, that he is open and courageous as he moves into life. Philosopher Alan Bloom called Thumos, quote, "the central passion in men's souls," unquote. Let me say that again. The central natural passion in men's souls. The central natural passion in men's souls. This sounds like a really big statement. That's what Thumos is. As a driving and energizing force, Thumos is a powerful aspect of a man's presence in his own life. Consider men from history or from your own life who have had this strong presence. They seem to be a little bigger than life, and you know they are in the room. In his book, The Abolition of Man, C.S. Lewis said, quote, "In a sort of ghastly simplicity, we remove the organ and demand the function. We make men without chests and expect of them virtue and enterprise. We laugh at honor and are shocked to find traitors in our midst. We castrate and bid the geldings be fruitful." Unquote. So men with chests have thumos. Men with virtue and enterprise have thumos. Unfortunately, something that our culture has achieved rather successfully is to create men who are void of thumos. Removing thumos is the equivalent of castration. Yet the double standard exists in the culture. They would still say, man up. That's what C.S. Lewis would say. The whole thing of the gelding. Castrate the gelding and then call them to be fruitful. So it's only through revitalizing the presence of thumos will we ever be able to really live as men, as we have been designed. The organ that's been removed is our heart, our vitality, our thumos. Even though we have been cut off from this important part of our masculinity, it can be reclaimed. We must begin to exercise the muscle of thumos. So Brett McKay from The Art of Manliness says it this way, quote, "Yet, in our modern day, instead of helping men to harness their thumos for positive ends, society has decided it's better to neuter the force altogether. To protect some people from getting hurt, we've tried to breed it out of men, even if it means its positive effects will be sacrificed along with the negative. It's like getting rid of electricity and all the benefits that have come with it, because some people get electrocuted." Unquote. Thumos comes alive when you are aroused, moved, and emotional. Thumos is when you're responsive to beauty, truth, goodness, and justice. It's righteous indignation in that it is sweet, gentle touch. It is excitement at the start of an adventure, and it's the eye contact during a job interview. It's being moved to tears at a good friend's funeral. And it's the awe you experience when you see a beautiful sunset or a beautiful ballet. Thumos is the driver that makes us get up to do something and stand up for something. It's the motivator and an instigator. It's a deep internal aliveness that pushes us toward adventure, love, and engagement. It's the drive into purpose and discovering why the hell you're on this planet. You will find your purpose if you live with thumos. Thumos will come alive in your soul, and your passion and purpose will become clear. A man with thumos will create an environment of safety, but also tension. He will hold space with whatever energy is in the room. He is able to be present and remain present in whatever situation that he's in. People know him as engaging, since he will interact with intent with those around him. Sure, he might even be an introvert, but he's still engaged with life and with people. When it's called for, he will stand up and be firm and rise up. He's ready and prepared because he is aware of what's going on. He holds fast to all that he sees as dear to him and is willing to speak up when necessary. The muscle of Thumos is as necessary as the rest of the muscles on this map, but some men have a tough time exercising this one. Just like the cornerstones of the quadrant suggest, it requires courage and connection. Thumos is totally connected with life, and it does take tons of courage to live with that kind of passion. So words that describe Thumos are, first, vitality. Vitality is a word that says a man is full of life. He has liveliness and is highly spirited. He is described as energetic and alive. He is engaged and interactive with people and with experience. He just enjoys life and is very, very present. A man with vitality is expressive with his words and actions, not being overly verbose or talkative, but also listening and being very curious. He's not so concerned with his own business, but he is engaged with the world where he wants to experience it all. It's the classic sucking the marrow out of life motif. He's very, very alive. Driven. A man with Thumos has an internal drive and motivation. He gets things done. His motivation comes out of the depth of his purpose and desires. He knows what he wants. He moves to make that happen. It could be work or it could be a relationship. Regardless, he is active to make it so. Temperance or discipline. As passion has two sides, so does Thumos. As much as a man is full of drive, he's also aware of not having or sacrifice. He's able to withhold, wait, or go without. This is temperance, choosing not to have something when you want it. At times, a man of Thumos will live in simplicity or without many things. He will choose to be stoic in nature. He will seek the building of his endurance with discipline and work. He does this with a choice and passion. Fearless and settled. This next word that describes Thumos seems very paradoxical, but he lives life in a today is a good day to die way. The big questions of life are fairly settled. No man can know fully what will come when he dies. But a man with Thumos embraces death with dignity. He has settled that he will die and made provisions for that as he has seen fit. Having settled that ultimate question, he can now live fully with fearlessness or courage in all he does. This is a huge part of Thumos. He can pursue all that he wants to the fullness and richness and depth with vulnerability and openness with all of his heart. So Thumos is also sturdiness, toughness, hardiness, strength, spiritedness, internal urge, conscious, aware, creates, builds, motivated, ownership, responsible, vision, reliable, count-onable, honor and purpose, self-discipline, endurance, intentional, purposeful, not filling the void, aware of the sacred, unfinished, unknowing, embracing mystery, doesn't have to control, lives in tension, anchored, influential, and fully alive. That's a lot of words. Hopefully that gives you a good idea of what Thumos is. Now let's look at the Thumos TLA, the three-letter acronym. It's LWH, live wholehearted, LWH. The man with Thumos lives with a whole heart. This means his heart is open to all that life has, profound and difficult things. He embraces life and love, as well as discipline and grief. He is integrated in as much as his internal resources as possible, open and aware of his deep internal workings. He is as connected to experiences, community, and family to the fullest degree he is capable. Wholehearted living is the mark of a man with Thumos. He is connected to life and lives life to the fullest by opening his heart to what life brings. He seeks thriving and abundance for himself and all who join him. That's the thumos muscle. Now let's look at the eros muscle. In the passion quadrant, and leaning toward the cornerstone of connection and love, is the eros muscle. Eros is in the top hemisphere because it has to do with relationship and is involved with the aspects of life that are about love, connection, and attachment. This means that while eros predominantly has to do with the realm of connection and relationships, he still is involved with courage and vulnerability. Eros is a Greek word that's one of the four Greek words found in the Bible that define love. So storge is the family bond type of love. Phileo is the friendship connection, as in Philadelphia, which is a word for brotherly love. Phileo is love, Delphos is brother, therefore Philadelphia. And agape is the type of love that's unconditional, sacrificial, and pure. The fourth one is eros, and it represents the sexual, sensual, romantic, passionate love of desire and physical attraction. So I'm using it here in the passion quadrant as the word describing the masculine muscle, which is very connected in relationship and very open with courage and vulnerability. A man who lives strong with the muscle of eros is living a life that is passionate. Remember, both desire and sacrifice. He's open and connected. It's about sexual arousal, but yet so much more. Eros is a life energy that comes out of us to create life. Whereas the thumos muscle is a man's passion for life and living full, eros is a man's passion for connection, intimacy, and relationship. Let me read that again, because I think that's a really strong distinction between eros and thumos. So thumos is a man's passion for life and living full. Eros is a man's passion for connection, intimacy, and relationship. A significant aspect of being human is the fact that life is in the inescapable context of relationships. We cannot escape this. For a human, relationships are similar to the air we breathe in that we are bathed in it in every moment. We need it to keep living well, and often we're oblivious to our interactions with it. Since we are engaged in relationships on a daily, even hourly basis, if we are going to live well and with intention, we must become aware of our interactions, our own necessity for relationships, and the ways in which we do relationships in healthy and unhealthy ways. Considering the muscle of eros will help you to make things clear. As the word eros is usually used for our sexuality and romantic interactions, I'm using it about general relationships as well. It would be the drive for building a strong family, or building your Mount Rushmore with the men that you want to have in your life. It's building any relationship that has deeper and stronger bonds than the normal interactions that you have on a daily basis. Your relationships with your children and members of your family of origin are these close relationships that you will pursue and develop as you embrace the muscle of eros. The passion a man has for his children, and a beautiful example of this muscle, the passion a man has for his children is a beautiful example of this muscle at play. Be passionate and engaged with your kids. It's one of the most beautiful expressions of our masculinity. Jack Donovan speaks of building your tribe or gang of men. Men who will be with you through thick and thin. Men that have proven themselves as those who will have your back when things get bad. This is your band of brothers. Men who are with you in life. This has nothing to do with romance or sex, but it has everything to do with passion and brotherhood. It's a deep sense of love. It's phileo love, but I'm also speaking here, it's a more passionate aspect to this as well. Every man must build his tribe. This also may seem odd, but this is where you would develop closeness in an intimate relationship with God, or your source, however you do see things. Many men desire to develop a deep relationship with their Creator, and this relationship intimacy is expressed in the realm of eros. It's deeply intimate and passionate, not as lovers or in the form of sexuality, but it's a close, intimate relationship that is anchored. But mostly, the muscle of eros is reserved for your relationship with your woman. She is the one who will receive your focus, desire, and commitment like no other. This is not putting her on a pedestal as a goddess, but reserving your energy and passion for her above all other women. There's something deeply sacred within a marriage, so pursuing and penetrating your own woman's heart, soul, and body is divine. Eros also allows you to be known, to be seen for who you really are. You are able to know and see others as well. This is a deep soul-level intimacy and is actually the essence of what eros really is. And remember, love is the prime virtue. Remember, the main idea of the word eros is about love. Love has always been the highest virtue in our world. Love is a prime virtue. Of all other virtues I have ever been presenting, love, either thumos or in the zest for life, or eros in the passion for connection and relationships, it brings depth and fullness into our lives like nothing else. So love brings life like nothing else in the world. What I'm saying is that a strong, driven, passionate, and engaged masculinity is what the muscle of eros is all about. So here's some more words that describe eros more fully. Vigor. A man who expresses eros is alive. His movements, intentions, and behaviors are full of energy and vitality. There's a fervor in his steps and choices. This may sound like he moves impulsively. He's not. He moves with life and passion. Not sure how else to say it, his life is full of life. That's what vigor is. He's engaged. The man of eros is engaged. He has entered into relationships with connectedness and openness. He's aware of the deep value of connectedness, and therefore moves into relationships with intent and clarity. Even though they're often a space of the sacred, relationships become a place of play as well. He's able to remain at rest in the deep moments of gravity and also teasing in lighter moments of laughter and ease. He is engaged. Sexual. Eros is a very sexy aspect of living. Engaging in eros fully means that a man has processed his shame around his sexuality. Many of us have a sense that sexuality is dirty or wrong, that our drive or desire for sex reveals something is broken or wrong within me. To become a man who is free, you must overcome this bondage. A man's sexuality is one of his most profound arenas of influence, as well as his enjoyment of life. Sex covers the full display of human living, from physical pleasure to emotional connection to transcendent worship. It's a beautiful thing that adds so much to the gift of life. Desire. Having a strong feeling of wanting something or for something to happen is desire. Wanting is desire. Many men have either forgotten their desires, lost permission to want, or have pushed aside their desires as if their desires are bad. Desire might be seen as selfish or sinful, therefore it must be disregarded. This is a huge pitfall. If you lose your desire, you lose your ability to want. When you lose your wants, you lose the ability to choose or lead your own life in freedom. You can't be free. Desire and eros are so intertwined. Eros is wanting something, whether that's sex or connection, or fulfilling a purpose. The roots of desire are deep within one's heart and soul. It's true that sometimes we might want something in an impulsive or foolish way, but that says more about how we choose rather than what we desire or what we most desire. For instance, I may desire to have sex with random women, but my greater desire is to have a strong marriage. So I choose my path with my one woman. Desire is good, and wanting is good. Remember that. Next is pursuit. Going after the things we desire is significant as well. Sitting passively is not how masculinity is lived out. Passivity and procrastination are the opposite of pursuit. Pursuing what you want and either making it happen or reaching out and getting it is masculine. Most women want to be pursued. It means that you care, that you think she is attractive, that you are aroused by her, that she is beautiful, that she impacts your life. She wants to know she rocks your world. She will test you, push back. That's part of the pursuit. But she wants to know that you will have resolved and keep up the pursuit. It's play, it's flirting, it's tension, and pursuit is eros in action. Sacrifice. Remember, the other side of the coin of passion was the pain that comes from loving and being connected. The more connection and love you feel, the more pain you may experience. Let's say you become very, very attached to your woman after years of open conversation, deep and meaningful lovemaking, building a family and pursuing your dreams. You are very attached, but as life has it, this is life, someone will die. The more you open yourself up to love, the more pain you will feel. Since someone will die, either you or her, someone will feel the most intense loss imaginable. Not only will you make the sacrifices to work hard or to go without things periodically, you will experience grief. I think what I'm saying here is the same thing as Buddhism, that attachment is suffering. However, with a different angle, I'm saying that living with Eros means that you will choose to attach deeply and therefore choose to suffer deeply. Eros, like passion, is suffering as well. However, it is suffering with deep meaning and intent. I hope that makes sense with the whole idea that you will suffer. You know, if she was to die first, you would feel the deep, deep pain. If you died, she would feel it. Unless you both died in a fiery car wreck, which then you're both okay. But it's a really significant thing. I want you to think about how sacrifice is a really powerful part of Eros. It really kind of gives you the gravity of what that is. So here's a huge list of other words that describe Eros. So Eros can be seen as lover, aroused, desire, connecting, attentive, seductive, flirty, robustness, health, horniness, intensity, focus, potent, gusto, hard-on, hardiness, stamina, play, fun, energizing, laughter, caring, heart, restlessness, alive, openness, empathetic, passionate, compassionate, attentive, knows and values emotions and feelings, liveliness, energetic, survivor, aware of and healed from wounds, longing, pursuit, appetite, motivated, generous, wants, undone, serenity and want, surrender, suffering, vulnerability, cherishing, delighting, blessing, open, embracing not having, and being okay with it because there's a true source of life, embracing purposeful emptiness, committed, and faithful. So the Eros TLA is PIP, pursue intimacy passionately. Pursue intimacy passionately. The man of Eros pursues intimacy with passion. He goes after, that's pursuing, closeness and connection, that's intimacy, with intention and courage, that's passionately. Eros is a driver of deep, meaningful connection. Intimacy is a state of openness that will allow someone to see you. So I've heard it this way of describing intimacy. It's kind of corny, but it makes sense. Imagine if you said intimacy as into me see. It's kind of cheesy, but it describes letting someone into your inner world. They now have seen and have your heart. Into me see. You have chosen to spend your vulnerability currency in this way with this person. So love is the prime virtue and intimacy is the doorway to true love. A man of Eros recognizes the deep life meaning of intimacy and then goes after it with vigor and vulnerability, which takes a strong measure of courage. You trust the ones you choose to be open with and give them permission to know the true you. Pursue intimacy passionately is a call to live life with deep Eros love. It's open and vulnerable. It's alive and free. It's connected and togetherness. It's one of the most terrifying, yet one of the most beautiful experiences of life. So now let's look at the archetype of Quadrant 4. This is the lover. So the lover archetype. There are many people in literature and history that hold the lover archetype. So people like Romeo and Juliet, Sir Lancelot and Guinevere, Rhett Butler and Scarlett O'Hara, Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy. How about Rose and Jack from the Titanic? And there's classic lovers, Valentino, Don Juan, Phantom of the Opera, or Casanova. Or the ones you don't often consider as the lover archetype, like Dracula, or maybe Pepe Le Pew. The lover is very common and a very important aspect of most literature. There's usually some sort of love going on. If not, the story's kind of boring. The funky pseudo-incest that was between Luke and Leia, Skywalker, made things very interesting until Han Solo stole Leia's heart. Even the Lord of the Rings had Samwise Gamgee and Rosie Cotton, or Aragorn and Arwen, as side stories to keep things a little bit interesting. The lover is everywhere, especially thriving in really bad literature. You know what I'm talking about with that. The lover seeks connection and intimacy. Building relationships is a significant pastime. These relationships could be romantic, but they're also platonic or networking type of relationships with no intent to be sexual. It's just about being with others. It could be in the context of sexual and romantic, it could be business and entrepreneurial, it could be sports and competition, or it could be in a gang or a tribe. The lover seeks and thrives in being with others. The lover is sensuous in that he's awake to all his physical, emotional, spiritual, and relational processes. He notices what's happening and holds space with as many experiences as possible. The lover has an enthusiastic appetite for living, for passion, and for experiences of all types. This is the thumos side of the lover, moving into life with excitement and intention. So the lover loves living and all that life provides. The lover lives with an open heart because he knows that this is how he will experience life in the fullest. He wants that wholehearted gusto that exists with openness to all experiences, whether they're fulfilling, joyful, or even in grief. Because of this, the lover can fall into what looks like and feel like depression. They're feeling the rough parts of life fully. Things will potentially become a crisis. As he feels deeply, he will process the experience deeply. This is necessary so that the realities of life will be seen, known, and implanted in his soul. But he's also capable of feeling the most beautiful and profound and uplifting parts as well. This will feel like a roller coaster at times because this is the way of life, and the lover lives life openly. The lover is often a seducer and a flirt, being very playful and fun in the arena of relational interaction and very comfortable with sexual tension. This is not necessarily to experience sex, but often it is, but it's just because he enjoys the banter and tension of relational energy. As a seducer, the lover seeks and appreciates beauty. The intimacy of a connection with another is profoundly beautiful. He allows himself to rest in the awe of anything beautiful, the feminine form a well-timed joke, a nice move in sports, art that moves him, a sunset, or his child giggling uncontrollably. His attachment to beauty and connection, to intimacy and experience, are what defines how he lives his life. He is highly attached to all these experiences. They bring depth and fullness to life. The seducer aspect often has been met with disdain because of how many men have used it just to get laid or take advantage of people. This is true. There's many people who have abused this aspect of the lover. However, when it's engaged with the solid frame quadrant, the seducer has a very healthy aspect of the masculine. The seducer is one who invites another into the life of thriving, intimacy, and enjoying experience. He invites others into life. The lover seduces, and seducing or inviting others into life It's just inviting people to love life and enjoy life. That's what the lover really does. The lover is not just super outgoing as an extrovert, but can also be found in the introverted side of personality. As an introvert, the lover's sense of connection seems to flow much deeper and pursuing a more profound sense of intimacy. He may pour much of his energy into building one deeper relationship than into many relationships. So God is often seen as the lover as he pursues mankind into relationship. Many aspects of Christianity speak to God's passion for paving the way for intimate relationships with the people he has created. Again, this is where the passion of the Christ is an expression of the love God has for us. The lover is the most fragile archetype in masculinity. As he feels deeply and experiences life openly, he is vulnerable to pain and loss. That's what vulnerability is. He's putting himself out there in life. So he has the high potential for some negative experiences. This is where seeking the wisdom of spending our currencies of love and vulnerability are essential. The lover must also be connected deeply to his solid frame. Remember, that's the king archetype. To maintain his groundedness, the balance of all the masculine quadrants is necessary to masculinity and actually creates an anti-fragile life. So the passion quadrant motto is, I will live with an open heart, pursuing life and love with energy, intent, purpose, and fearless passion, at times even sacrifice. When I don't receive what I desire, I will embrace the emptiness of not having with grace and maturity. So the passion quadrant, I'll read it again. I will live with an open heart, pursuing life and love with energy, intent, purpose, fearless passion, and at times sacrifice. When I don't receive what I desire, I will embrace the emptiness of not having with grace and maturity. So the distortions of quadrant four. So the dark side of quadrant four is three main pitfalls: a closed heart, impulsivity or compulsivity, and abuse. These shadows of passion, thumos, eros, and the lover are not obvious as distortions because they're more normal or expected of men than not. Most men dramatically fall into these distortions without even thinking about what they're doing. So let's look at those distortions. A closed heart. Now, obviously, this is the opposite of having an open heart. An open heart is open to experience and love, but also pain and suffering. A closed heart is led by fearfulness and self-protection. It's generally seen in a defensive or victim posture. The closed heart therefore disengages and withdraws from life, from relationship, and from any experience that may be difficult or uncomfortable. This results in a life that is unconscious, blank, powerless, and generally dead to abundance. The closed heart also has alexithymia. Now, alexithymia is a fancy-dancy word for not being in touch with your emotions. When you close off to outside pain, you also close off to vital internal resources as well. So these men are closed off to themselves as well as to others. whatever you've been taught about emotions, it's very, very unwise to close them off. You must engage with your internal resources, your emotional process being one of the most important. So rather than being okay with alexithymia, become more emotionally engaged. Men who are emotionally engaged may look stoic still, but they're quite aware of their own emotional processes and vulnerably open with their emotions with people who are close to them and emotionally safe. They learn what anger is, that it's not the guiding thing that controls their life, but only indicating their well-being, an indicator guiding them to what they need. They have passion, living with vigor and vitality, proceeding from freedom. Passion requires that you embrace the fears and anxieties of life, not escaping from them or numbing them out. It's living a wholehearted life. Impulsivity or compulsivity. So this is where a man has limited self-discipline with what he thinks, and unconsciously, he ritualistically acts out to get what he thinks he desires. He will move with impulsivity, acting without thought or intention. He will do things foolishly. Impulsivity is the passion with no internal restraint. It's moving without healthy boundaries, integrity, or honor. Compulsivity is moving and acting according to whatever urges one may have at any given moment. Similar to impulsivity, compulsivity is more about urges that exist from addictions or counterfeits, things that we pursue because we think they'll give us life or fill a void within you. The man of passion understands these urges, where they come from, and is able to choose emptiness or not having something with wisdom and self-discipline. So passion can easily become addiction. So impulsive and compulsive behavior is addiction, and addiction is desire gone awry. It is our deep desires being played out without wisdom, integrity, or the ability to be empty or going without something. Addiction wants to fill the void with consumerism, possessing something, controlling something, using others or substances in addictive absorption to relieve pain or emptiness. With fearful and anxious self-protection, a man with passion is able to choose to live on the sacrifice, an empty side of the passion coin. That's really important. That concept could really be developed a lot deeper. It's important to think about making sure that you that's how we get out of addiction, is being okay with emptiness. So the last one is abuse. So abuse is controlling others with your surroundings in order to achieve a sensation of power. It's being played at in the power over category. It's a drive to absorb and to possess things in order to fulfill personal deficit or compensate for inadequacies. Although the majority of men reduce their positive influence on the world by refraining from entering into life, that's passivity, some men will engage in behaviors which abuses those people around him. Abuse is improper and unhealthy treatment of a person, where the other person is a tool for the abuser to achieve the sense of strength that is missing from his internal self. This distortion exists in this quadrant because this is how men without integrity or internal fortitude often relate. Abuse comes in many forms: physical, sexual, emotional, verbal, etc. A man who abuses has chosen to fight against the very people he has been designed to protect. He's fighting a battle against his own masculinity, hurting those around him rather than providing safety for them. The abuser moves out of self-protectiveness and fear. He uses the strength that he has to put those around him into harm, to break them down with accusation and exposing them to potential harm. This is power over, but it's different in that it's purposefully controlling others, which is a perversion of all the quadrants: power four, solid frame, expansion, and passion. It's a perversion. So just a few concrete steps to build passion is responsibility. Responsibility is huge in the passion quadrant. You must be diligent to keep your values and move from your solid core with your values and character, leading how you move. Many men have been lost in a maelstrom of wretched relationships because they choose unwisely which women to interact with. Be the one who chooses and chooses well who you might engage with passion. Hold strong with your personal boundaries and don't spend your precious currencies on someone just because they're hot or because they're into you. Self-care. To maintain personal integrity, I must engage in intentional and consistent self-care. Self-care is always important. In relationship and romance, many men give up themselves to keep her happy, or more precisely, to keep her happy with them. You can't do this. You must keep your own self-care at the top of your priorities. If she doesn't allow this, then she cannot be the one for you. Passion is about love, romance, and connection. You must not lose yourself in that. Keep your frame and your priorities. Balance. Keeping a good balance in life will help you hold your center. Like a responsibility or self-care, it seems redundant to talk about balance, but as you engage in passion, if you do not hold fast to your solid frame, you will lose both your power and your ability to expand. So many men lose their soul in this quadrant. There's much to be experienced with passion, but it must be done while holding fast to your center, your solid frame. So let's look at passion or character comparisons. So first is Jesus. So maybe it's the Father in the picture who is the lover, as in, for God so loved the world that he gave his only Son. But Jesus is definitely a lover at heart. He's the quintessential man of passion. That's why he is the one who had the experience that described as the passion of the Christ. He loved and he suffered. He experienced passion in its fullness. I don't think you could score any higher, since he was the one who actually defines passion and love. Maximus. So a major theme in Gladiator is the love that Maximus has for his wife and son. The pain that he feels with his loss, and the evil of Commodus, and the idea that in this life or the next, all speak to the idea of passion, desire, and suffering that he has as a lover of life, of his family and his men. I do really think Maximus is a lover. William Wallace. Like Gladiator, a major theme, and why Wallace even engages like he does in Braveheart, is because of love. The pain of the loss of his love in the evil of the Rite of the First Knight, set things up that his loss and suffering thrust William Wallace from lover to being warrior. His passion for freedom for his men and his country became his driving purpose because of the pain from his deep love. Aragorn. So the backstory of his love with Arwen throws the lover archetype directly into the path of the story. Here he is being a warrior, and with one swoop he's caught into a spectacular scandal of loving an elven princess where she sacrifices her immortality to love a man. The end of the trilogy present Aragorn not as a ranger or a warrior, but as the king and the lover. So others as the lover. You have some very smooth operators in literature, movies, and history. Usually they're not given much respect as other archetypes, because they're often players, like love 'em and leave 'em types, or they seem to take advantage of the innocent woman. While this often is how the lover is portrayed, the true lover usually has a big heart and cares too much at times. So part of the fun of the story is how he gets embroiled in the chaos of relationship. So Han Solo, let's see, Bill Clinton, Humphrey Bogart's characters are all like this, caught up into something they didn't anticipate or expect. So let's look at the final group reflection questions and follow-up of Quadrant 4, Passion. So Quadrant 4 is at the crossroads of connection and courage. It's where we develop our vulnerability and passion for the world and the people in it. The motto is, I will live with an open heart. I will pursue things that I desire with energy, intent, and purpose. And when I don't receive what I want, I will embrace the emptiness of not having with grace and maturity. This quadrant has the muscles of thumos and eros, the TLAs of live wholehearted, LWH, and pursue intimacy passionately, PIP, and is represented by the archetype of the lover. So, working with balance between connection with the people around us and the courage to engage with life in the fullest, both in adventure and relationship, it's a significant part of living out our masculinity. In what ways has balancing this been difficult or something you're good at? So the motto of the Passion Quadrant, I will live with an open heart, I will pursue things I desire with energy, intent, and purpose, and when I don't receive what I want, I will embrace the emptiness of not having with grace and maturity. To what degree have you lived like this? And what could you do to have more of an open heart, pursuing and being okay when you don't get what you want? Next, passion is at the center of the quadrant of masculinity. Passion has two sides, suffering or sacrifice, and the side of desire and wanting. How have you been able to live with this kind of passion in your life? In what ways have you had a balance between these two ideas of passion? Thumos is the muscle that's living with zest, zeal, and vitality in your life. It's the vigor of the wild stallion. It's the powerful life force inside of a man, moving him to profoundly engage with life. How has this described you or not? Who's in your life that is like this, and what would it take for you to build this into your soul? LWH, live wholehearted, is the acronym for the thumos muscle. This means that your heart is open, engaged, and interactive with life, relationships, and the world with openness and integration of all yourself. What are ways that you could grow in this and gain more proficiency in living wholehearted? The eros muscle is one many men consider to be a great goal, but it's often just orgasm-centric, that is, where the orgasm is over, the experience is over. Eros has much to do with intimacy-centered experience, where closeness and being known is primary. In what ways have you engaged in this more mature form of connectedness? The acronym for the Eros muscle is PIP, Pursue Intimacy Passionately. To what degree do you think you intentionally move into intimacy or closeness in your primary relationships? The lover archetype has many classic characters in literature. What are some of your favorites, and in what ways do you actually emulate them? So what other insights or thoughts do you have about this lesson? So that's the fourth quadrant. I hope you really enjoyed that. It's a pretty significant one, as is all of the others. So just want you guys to see that. Hopefully you can work through the questions with another person in the Brotherhood and be able to just keep working on this, because this is something I would hope that you keep coming back to after the years and just keep building this into your life, because the whole map of masculinity really has a ton of meaning. And if you're able to do all four categories and really create that strongly into your life's going to totally change. And so from here, the next categories, we're going to talk through how we actually build all this stuff into our lives, master the actual art of being a man. So with that, as always, guys, stay solid, my friends.